Hello, I'm William Klein.
And I'm Dan Petrosini. And you are listening to the Sanity Plea podcast. Yes, I said Sanity Plea. It is not 1998.
We're going to focus on nerd culture. I love board games, so I'll probably talk about board games a lot. Comic books, TV, movies, video games.
Yeah, I was originally proposing Sanity Plea is still a working title. We haven't agreed on that yet. I was proposing
1999.
I was proposing Dan and Will's Nerd Talk, but that would require almost an entire episode of talking about what qualifies as nerd culture, and that's just a big round of navel gazing that I don't want to get into right now. So I think basically it's there have just been multiple times where we'll have had a conversation between us or some friends and think, man, we should have recorded that.
Yes.
And put it on the radio because that was, well, enlightening is probably too strong a word.
Insightful?
Probably also too strong a word, but entertaining anyway, which was kind of the same impetus behind our short-lived webcomic project back when those were getting big, which to this day we still have situations where, like, man, that would be a great topic for
great
a comic.
Comic,
but
yes,
our store of ideas exceeded our artistic capacity to produce them. Although I think it's been shown by XKCD that, I mean, stick figures work.
They do.
We could just restart.
They're expressive.
The main thing we want to cover today is a new board game that Dan introduced me and some friends to the other night. So take it away, Dan.
It's not exactly new, but it's new to everyone that played it, I believe. It is Power Grid. That's the wildly popular German board game about purchasing power plants and supplying electricity to cities. It's published by Rio Grande. It plays 2 to 6 players, and it takes about 2 hours to play. The fun thing about Power Grid is that it combines several unique mechanics that could be an entire board game unto themselves. There's auctions, there's area of control, and there's resource management. So players in step one of the game, or phase one of the game, they bid on power plants. Everyone can purchase a power plant if they want. That starts with the player that's in the lead. In the second phase of a turn, you then purchase resources, and the player that's in last place gets to buy first. And that serves as a kind of balancing mechanism because the first person to buy gets the cheapest resources. There are different resources: coal, oil, garbage, uranium, that power different types of plants. And the cost of each resource depends on how plentiful the resource is. So the player that buys first gets the cheapest coal or the cheapest oil. The game turns into the area of control part of the game, where again the player that's in last place gets to purchase a building in a city. On the map, in our game, we played the U.S. side of the map. The base game comes with two maps, the U.S. and Germany. There's also a variety of expansions out that have many different countries for a lot of replayability. And then finally, in the fourth phase of a turn, you expend your resources that you've purchased, and you earn income based on how many cities you supply. The game ends when a certain number of buildings are built, and it's the player that can supply the most energy to his buildings at that time, once the threshold is met, wins. I enjoyed it. It's a little bit complex and unforgiving in that if you make an error early in the game, it can really come back to destroy your chances of winning in the late game. So it's a game where you have to make the optimal move each time that it's your turn, and it's probably not best to be drinking. It would certainly affect your judgment. Will, do you want to have anything to add about your overall impressions of Power Grid?
Well, yeah, and I'm glad you're moving into sort of the review part. I mean, as a...
Yeah, sorry I didn't transition that better.
No, not at all. As a new player, a colleague of ours commented about how it's a pretty fast-paced game, but there's not a whole lot of... Most of the decisions you make...
Maybe you should open up with what your overall impression was. Did you like Power Grid?
Did I like Power Grid? Yes, but I wouldn't be chomping at the bit to play again. The thing is, the game goes through successive rounds of bidding on a new power plant at an auction, buying resources, and then earning money based on...
cities powered.
Based on the size of your power grid and whether or not you had the fuel to run the entire thing. And the auction process...
Bear in mind that it's much more complex than what we're talking about here. We've given a very bare bones... and we've done it no justice at all.
No.
Very bare bones overview of the game.
No, but you've told them what the sort of the general theme is.
Right.
And I mean, most of the game, most of the strategy to me seems to consist during the auction round, because that's when there's sort of the most subjective decision making, where it's not clear: do you want to bid early on the plant you want? Sit back and wait for, you know, a better plant to come along, because as the game progresses, you get more and more sophisticated and efficient plants come out. So whereas at the beginning it might require 2 units of coal to power a city, later on you can power 7 cities for the same thing. So you have to sort of decide, do you want to spend money now on a crummy plant or spend more money later on a better plant? That's where the strategy in the game seemed to lie.
Was.
even better. And after that, as a colleague of ours pointed out...
So you never were torn... Like, I was often torn between spending all the maximum amount of money I could on stockpiling resources versus holding money back to purchase new cities that turn.
I mean, the way I worked every round was once the sort of squishy...
You should tell everyone you did not win.
No, but I put up a respectable showing. I mean, I was in the middle of the pack.
Also, it should be noted that you could have powered the most cities, but you didn't have enough built to win.
Right.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm getting at is round to round, I think most of the game lies in the auction and the purchase of plants. Because once that's done, the rest of your turn is basically just saying, okay, I'm going to set it. I need, based on what the map looks like right now, I need to set aside this much money to expand my grid. You know, I can look at the map and see, okay, the next city that's adjacent to my network is going to cost me this much to buy to.
Which raises an interesting point. I was doing the same thing, looking at what was my next cheapest expansion. But I think there's an element to perhaps playing to the other players in relation to yourself, their grids, be it blocking them or preventing them from rapid expansion. I would like to have give it a few more plays to see if the area of control game on the board really changes things.
Yeah.
Like you said, Paul was able to zerg the eastern U.S. because there were a lot of major cities close together that he could quickly expand to. I think he built four cities in one turn at one point.
And no one else
was.
Because
he was in third place and he shot up to first.
Yeah, well, yeah. And to finish my thought there, I think once you get to that phase, it's just, okay, here's what I'm going to expand to, set aside that much money, and spend the rest on the cheapest resources available to power all the cities that you have. I mean, I think it's more like you didn't really have any decisions to make. You just had to analyze the situation.
That's interesting.
At hand. I'm not calling that a positive or a negative, but it felt like after the auction of plants was done with, it was just kind of rote. Like,
so
all right,
you never chose, you always chose building more cities over stockpiling resources.
Well, unless the resources were particularly cheap at that time and it was a good buy, no, I wouldn't really stockpile because you can buy it in every round.
But the price might be different.
The price might be different. So if they were particularly high, I might not bother. If the price when it came to my turn were particularly high, then I wouldn't stockpile. If the price were particularly low when it came to me, I'd be like, all right, I'll buy coal for this round and next.
We had an unfortunate randomization for our plants, too. Uranium was it uranium in the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uranium was incredibly cheap when the first uranium power plant came up. It was like all 4 or 5 of them came up like within a turn or two of each other.
Right.
You would think that one would have gotten out earlier or, you know, driven that
Maybe.
Cost down. And garbage, I think, didn't come out. The garbage plants, there was one early and they didn't show up until late in the game either.
Yeah. But to get to the other part of your comment, I didn't really see much strategy at play in the choice of where to build. I mean, at any point in time, there was one city, or if you had the resources, maybe 2 or 3, I couldn't even see that side of the map, so I don't know. Were cities especially cheap? Like, were the network links especially cheap in the northeast corner
of
the map?
Yes, okay. Like Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, all very close.
Yeah. I mean, we all seemed to kind of pick stuff that was near where we were sitting.
Really, we did. I picked the center of the map, thinking I could go out expand easily.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the strategy, is to start in the northeast, because those cities are easy to expand with each other. But the point I'm making is, when it comes to my point in my turn, I have X amount of money set aside, and I have Y that it's going to cost me, where Y is the cheapest expenditure I can make to go to the next city. So there's not much of a decision to make there. Like, you're talking about blocking people, but once the game gets to the phase where you're allowed to have more than one player occupying a city, that ceases to matter. At most, you're making it $5 or $10 more expensive for someone to move into a city. Like, I managed to encase Jeff,
and then the next turn,
and the next turn, it didn't matter. Yeah. So I don't. I mean, you had a more crowded zone in the eastern part of the map.
And I think from what I've read on BoardGameGeek, some of the other maps address that problem. It's more cramped quarters. It forces people to play the area of control game. The U.S. map is pretty spread out, from what I gather. Mm-hmm. I'd like to maybe try again with the German side. To see if that does make a difference. And I know that they have, like, Italy and Korea maps that are much more interactive, I guess.
So even with you, Tom, and Paul in the eastern United States,
there was always a natural expansion.
Yeah, so you didn't really have to, like, worry about Tom doing X or...
Not really, no.
Yeah, and even if he did, by the time it came to your turn, that just changed what the Opticum strategy was to be.
Exactly. So I would certainly encourage everyone to give it a try. It's very different than other board games that the unwashed masses typically play. There's a lot going on.
Well, let's talk about that. What why should or shouldn't someone give this a try?
If you wanted a game, if you were looking for a game that was not military themed, if you wanted a game where there wasn't going to be much luck, there's no die rolling.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's no, other than the randomized power plant deck, there's nothing like, whoop, I drew the winning card, you lose, or whoop, I got 3 sixes, you lose.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for that, it's also, if you like analytical games, I think a person that likes chess would enjoy, like Jeff said, optimal play. Like, there's always the best move to do.
Yeah, I see that. But the thing with chess, you're much less likely to calculate the optimum move sitting there looking at the board. Whereas with Power Grid, you're quite likely to happen upon it.
Okay.
So I might disagree with the comparison to chess there.
Okay, what would you recommend it for someone looking? What kind of people do you think would enjoy Power Grid?
Well, see, I've already said that it didn't quite tickle my fancy to a particular degree. I would say a good positive to the game is that there wasn't a lot of downtime. With some strategy games, you sit there for a long time waiting for someone else to make his move. And that doesn't really happen in Power Grid. The auction round sort of involves everyone at once. And the other rounds, the buying resources and collecting your money, those happen so quickly, but there's not a lot of downtime. And like I said, if we had all been focusing on the game and not having a lot of side conversations and inebriating beverages, we could have gotten the game done a lot faster.
I
think it would make a decent introduction to, shall we say, a different caliber of board games for someone who maybe is coming from the Candyland Monopoly set. But I guess I don't know whether this is the best game for that.
What did you think of the theme? A lot of people criticize Eurogames for having a pasted-on theme.
Okay, the theme. I think in this one, the theme actually mattered. Like, it felt like I was actually running a power grid in that. In the sense that, you know, I was buying resources like coal and oil and uranium and garbage, or in some cases buying wind farms and solar plants, or the mystical fusion card that came up very late in the game but no one managed to buy. So
50, I
think it incorporated the theme pretty well into gameplay.
The theme is okay.
I don't know that other than the fact that it fit what I was doing, I don't know that it like made me enjoy the game more or less.
If you're looking for a game that you want to feel immersive in and feel like you're actually doing something that you couldn't normally do. I mean, I could. It's possible for me to go out and become a power manager, power factory manager in real life.
Yes.
It's not possible for me to fight in the Civil War or World War II,
yeah,
or in the future or in space or with a lightsaber. So that's kind of a letdown if you're looking for dungeon crawling.
It's not particularly escapist.
In another episode, we will address Hive and the Beetle strategy. If I see something as instant, I immediately delete it from my regular
queue. I don't care.
But what if you accidentally get an instant watch movie in hard copy?
Well, in that
then
case,
you've wasted a whole turnaround.
If that happens, I won't have watched it yet, so it's not a waste to me to have it.
It
on
is very. That's a huge waste.
The turnaround time, you have a point, but like, I'm not dying to like. I'm not lying. Like, God, if only I had a movie. If it weren't like en route. If it weren't sitting.
Okay, but still, this is foolish. You're a fool.
Season one of Torch. Now, here's the thing. I tried to watch this, but it's the instant is in HD.
Yeah.
My computer can't handle it. It's too jerky.
Oh.
Yeah. So
you can't choose the non-HD option.
I did not find a way to do so. It may have been there, but I was like, I can just get the disc.
Is this the new Clash of the Titans?
No.
Yeah, good. That's a very bad movie.
Let's see here. Monty Python, Willow.
Never any story. Willow, yeah.
Willow, it's been a long time since I've seen Willow.
See, look at this. I told you to add this at least a year and a half ago.
And now that's where it's made it to. It's okay.
You never seen Sunshine? That's a hell of a movie. Mm-hmm. It gets kind of like when it turns into the horror movie, like when they're on the spaceship being hunted by the possessed man.
You're thinking of Event Horizon.
No, I'm not. This is on this movie.
Multiple movies did it's sci-fi and then it becomes a horror film?
Yes. The main premise of that movie where they're on a mission to restart the sun is very cool, and they have like the sweet ship with the giant sun shield that doesn't fry them, and they're close to it, and they have the nukes to like try to, you know, jump start it. That's cool.
So it's like Event Horizon. So it's like Armageddon, basically.
Kind of. Yeah.
Wasn't Armageddon bad?
Armageddon was very bad. Again, and it's a kind of a cool idea, but it turned into like a lousy romance film with Aerosmith song.
Well, the problem was we had heard the Aerosmith song a bazillion times before
and the music,
even
the
seeing
music
the
video
film.
Featuring clips
from the film.
Yeah.
So we knew the story ahead of time.
Yeah.
Or at least the fact that
the Ben Affleck we
learned that the lovers were star-crossed in advance.
Yes. Yes. Yes, they were. Wait.
For which I guess
he made it back. I think he makes it back.
No, they don't make it back.
No.
Ben Affleck
does
it back,
right. So
but,
it's a happy ending for Love, except her dad dies.
Oh.
Who is
That's her dad. See, it's
not Ben. Ben Affleck is the lover.
I know.
Her father is his employer, who is the guy from Die Hard.
Yeah, what's his name?
God, now we're both. You've worn off on me.
We'll edit this out.
His name is.
It's amazing how you can draw a blank like this.
I know. He's one of the most famous actors of all time.
I don't know about that.
You wouldn't agree that Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis, there you go. Yeah. I knew it was a B. I kept wanting to say Ben Stiller just for comedy's sake. And so the thing is, Event Horizon has, and apparently this movie will be like it too, and I'll be prepared for it. I was watching, have you ever seen Solaris?
Solaris.
It's George Clooney.
That's a remake of an old film, though.
Okay, that's fine. But the point is, I watched Solaris.
Yeah.
Where George Clooney is this psychiatrist who's sent to the space station where odd things are happening, and it has the kind of this similar, very muted, and the whole ship is kind of eerily quiet and calm.
Right.
And the people are sort of normal on the surface, but you're afraid that they're crazy. And I kept waiting for it to turn into
guy trapped on a space station.
Guy trapped on a space station being hunted by the dude from Hellraiser, except
not Hellraiser.
Except not Hellraiser.
Event Horizon was a bad movie.
And it didn't happen.
Right.
Solaris ended.
People like Solaris.
It was. I didn't really get it, but.
Well, I mean, it's because the films that do it well, like, have you seen the original Alien?
It's been a long time.
That's basically a trapped in a haunted house with a sci-fi theme again. Sigourney Weaver is trapped on that ship.
I saw that movie when I was a kid, and that scared me a lot.
Yeah, and because it's a good movie, it's doing that theme well.
I mean, kids can be scared by.
Well, but
lots
I mean, it's
things.
A classic movie. I mean,
yes, fair enough.
Okay, get this out of here. Let's start talking about the books.
And finally, in this episode, let's talk about what we are reading, watching, playing, or otherwise what's on our desk right now. Dan, why don't you start us off?
Okay, I am currently reading Jonathan Franzen's newest novel that's called Freedom. Came out on August 31st. It got an incredible amount of hype. But with that said, I am enjoying it. It's I'm only about 250 pages in. It's a 500, 600 page book. I did enjoy his first novel, The Corrections. It was about a family. This too is about a family. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I just finished the about the 200 pages on the autobiography of one of the characters, and it was very well done. And I'm looking forward to getting through the rest of the book. I am also reading comics. I just started to reread the Fables series. It's published by Vertigo Comics, and it's written by Mark. I'm sorry. Art's by Mark Buckingham, and the writing is by Bill Willingham, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. It's got 97 issues currently published. I had about half the series, and then recently, I've been rereading the series because it's been several years now since I last read them, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. Fables, like fairy tale characters, have been exiled from their universe, and they've taken up residence in New York City. The initial stories revolve around the sheriff of the Fableton community, which would be the Big Bad Wolf, and there's the mayor, which was King. I can't remember. Now it's Prince Charming, and there's Snow White, and there's Beauty and the Beast, and Sleeping Beauty, and a ton, a Little Boy Blue. Jack and the Beanstalk, but it basically deals with the fable characters, mostly focusing on the European fables, and them living with Mundies, which are normal humans, and it's very imaginative. They've brought in the Arabian Nights fables. They're bringing in the I bet they're going to do the African and Asian fables, but it's very well done, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So if you get a chance, check out Fables. I really like it.
I mean, how big of a series are we talking? Is it still ongoing?
I think it's still ongoing. It started in 2001, and it's still going. I think they're on issue 92 or 93, so about 100 issues deep. You can pick it up, and there's a ton of trade paperbacks. You know, it would be an investment. To start now,
but it's one single unified storyline. It's not like a universe where there are multiple like different series.
Yes, there is a secondary series within the Fables universe, but it's nothing like X-Men.
If you want to get into it, you have a clear starting point.
Absolutely, yeah. And I recommend it highly.
And what I'm really hearing here is someone found a way to take a bunch of existing characters. And without too much effort, just sort of mix and match to generate storylines as needed.
Yes, it's interesting to see how the characters interrelate.
I see.
Yeah.
Anyway,
what are you reading, Will?
On my bedside table lately is a short story collection which a friend lent to me years ago. And I am just now getting to. It's called Future War. It was published in 1999. And it's a series of short stories, sci-fi short stories by various authors, with the theme of, as you might guess, what war might be like in the future.
Imaginative title.
I'm just a few stories into it. Even so, I'm enjoying it so far. It started off with a story called Second Variety by Philip K. Dick. Actually, the last one I finished was called Floating Dogs by Ian McDonald, and that story alone made it worth picking up the entire book, so I am quite pleased so far. But that's about all that's on my reading desk at the moment.
Thank you for listening. To hear more about today's topics, to hear more episodes, or to send us feedback, please visit us on the web at williamcline.org. That's www.williamcline.org.
Gets turned into a remix or something. I'm saying, it's like eh, with like rap music in the background. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I don't want to be remixed or auto-tuned or any of that shit.
So, are you canceling the project?
I don't know, maybe.
All right, well.
Sanity Fleet Podcast, we're back from 1998.
Let's record an intro.